by the most vigorous preparations for war. The army, which Julian held in readiness for immediate action, was recruited and augmented by the disorders of the times. The ambassadors of Julian had been instructed to execute with the utmost diligence their important commission. But in their passage through Italy and Illyricum, they were detained by the tedious and affected delays of the provincial governors. They were conducted by slow journeys from Constantinople to Caesarea in Cappadocia. And when at length they were admitted to the presence of Constantius, they found that he had already conceived, from the dispatches of his own officers, the most unfavourable opinion of the conduct of Julian and of the Gallic army. The letters were heard with impatience. The trembling messengers were dismissed with indignation and contempt. And the looks, the gestures, the furious language of the monarch expressed the disorder of his soul. He required that the presumptuous Caesar should expressly renounce the appellation and rank of Augustus, which he had accepted from the rebels. That he should descend to his former station of a limited and dependent minister. That he should vest the powers of the state and army in the hands of those officers who were appointed by the imperial court. And that he should trust his safety to the assurances of pardon, which were announced by Epictetus, a Gallic bishop, and one of the Arian favourites of Constantius. Several months were ineffectually consumed in the treaty which was negotiated at the distance of 3,000 miles between Paris and Antioch. And as soon as Julian perceived that his moderate and respectful behaviour served only to irritate the pride of an implacable adversary, he boldly resolved to commit his life and fortune to the chance of a civil war. He gave a public and military audience to the quaestor Leonus. The haughty epistle of Constantius was read to the attentive multitude. And Julian protested, with the most flattering deference, that he was ready to resign the title of Augustus if he could obtain the consent of those whom he acknowledged as the authors of his elevation. The faint proposal was impetuously silenced, and the acclamations of Julian Augustus continue to reign by the authority of the army, of the people, of the republic, which you have saved, thundered at once from every part of the field, and terrified the pale ambassador of Constantius. After this message, which might be considered as a signal of irreconcilable war, Julian, who some weeks before had celebrated the Christian festival of the Epiphany, made a public declaration that he committed the care of his safety to the immortal gods, and thus publicly renounced the religion as well as the friendship of Constantius.
From far and wide across the empire, Julian Augustus received messages of support and pledges of armed might to assist him in his civil war against Constantius. He marched. But as Gibbon writes, the humanity of Julian was preserved from the cruel alternative, which he pathetically laments, of destroying or of being himself destroyed. And the seasonable death of Constantius in AD 361 delivered the Roman Empire from the calamities of civil war. Aged 45, Constantius died of a fever at Mops Sucrini near Tarsus. At Constantinople, in his 32nd year, Julian was acclaimed emperor.
The throne of Julian, which the death of Constantius fixed on an independent basis, was the seat of reason, of virtue, and perhaps of vanity. He despised the honours, renounced the pleasures, and discharged with incessant diligence the duties of his exalted station. And there were few among his subjects who would have consented to relieve him from the weight of the diadem, had they been obliged to submit their time and their actions to the rigorous laws which their philosophic emperor imposed on himself. One of his most intimate friends, who had often shared the frugal simplicity of his table, has remarked that his light and sparing diet, which was usually of the vegetable kind, left his mind and body always free and active for the various and important business of an author, a pontiff, a magistrate, a general, and a prince. In one and the same day he gave audience to several ambassadors, and wrote or dictated a great number of letters to his generals, his civil magistrates, his private friends, and the different cities of his dominions.